And he sent away the chair, and he walked home alone with himself. And out of his heaviness there stood out strangely but one clear thought, and it was a pain to him. And it was this, that he wished he had not taken the 2 pearls from Olan that day when she was washing his clothes at the pool. And he would never bear to see Lotus put them in her ears again. Thus thinking heavily, he went on alone, and he said to himself, "There in that land of mine is buried the first good half of my life, and more. It is as though half of me were buried there. And now it is a different life in my house." And suddenly he wept a little, and he dried his eyes with the back of his hand as a child does. 27. During all this time, Wang Lung had scarcely thought of what the harvests were, so busy had he been with the wedding feasts and funerals in his house. But one day Ching came to him, and he said, "Now that the joy and sorrow are over, I have to tell you about the land."
"Say on, then," Wang Lung answered. "I have scarcely thought whether I had land or not these days, except to bury my dead in."
Ching waited in silence for a few minutes in respect to Wang Lung when he spoke thus, and then he said softly, "Now may heaven avert it, but it looks as though there would be such a flood this year as never was, for the water is swelling up over the land, although it is not summer yet, and too early for it to come like this."
But Wang Lung said stoutly, "I have never had any good from that old man in heaven yet. Incense or no incense, he is the same evil. Let us go and see the land." And as he spoke, he rose.
Now Ching was a fearful and timid man, and however bad the times were, he did not dare, as Wang Lung did, to exclaim against heaven. He only said, "Heaven wills it," and he accepted flood and drought with meekness.
"Not so, Wang Lung. He went out on his land, on this piece and that, and he saw it was as Ching said. All those pieces along the moat, along the waterways, which he had bought from the old lord of the House of Huang, were wet and mucky from the full water oozing up from the bottom, so that the good wheat on this land had turned sickly and yellow. The moat itself was like a lake, and the canals were rivers, swift and curling in small eddies and whirlpools, and even a fool could see that with summer rains not yet come, there would be that year a mighty flood, and men and women and children starving again. Then Wang Lung ran hastily here and there over his land, and Ching came silently as a shadow behind him, and they estimated together which land could be planted to rice, and which land, before the young rice could be put on it, would already be under water. And looking at the canals brimming already to the edge of their banks, Wang Lung cursed and said, 'Now that old man in heaven will enjoy himself, for he will look down and see people drowned and starving. That is what the accursed one likes.' Thus he said loudly and angrily, so that Ching shivered and said, 'Even so, he is greater than any one of us, and do not talk so, my master.' But since he was rich, Wang Lung was careless, and he was as angry as he liked, and he muttered as he walked homeward to think of the water swelling up over his land and over his good crops. Then it all came to pass as Wang Lung had foreseen. The river to the north burst its dikes, its furthermost dikes first, and when men saw what had happened, they hurried from this place to that to collect money to mend it, and every man gave as he was able, for it was to the interest of each to keep the river within its bounds. The money they entrusted, then, to the magistrate in the district, a man new and just come. Now this magistrate was a poor man, and had not seen so much money in his lifetime before, being only newly risen to his position through the bounty of his father, who had put all the money he had and could borrow to buy this place for his son, so that from it the family might acquire some wealth. When the river burst again, the people went howling and clamoring to this magistrate's house, because he had not done what he promised, and mended the dikes. And he ran and hid himself, because the money he had spent in his own house, even 3,000 pieces of silver. And the common people burst into his house, howling and demanding his life for what he had done. And when he saw he would be killed, he ran and jumped into the water and drowned himself. And thus the people were appeased. But still the money was gone, and the river burst yet another dike, and another before it was content with the space it had for itself. And then it wore away these walls of earth until none could tell where a dike had been in that whole country, and the river swelled and rolled like a sea over all the good farming land,
and the wheat and the young rice were at the bottom of the sea. One by one the villages were made into islands, and men watched the water rising, and when it came within 2 feet of their doorways, they bound their tables and beds together and put the doors of their houses upon them for rafts. And they piled what they could of their bedding and their clothes and their women and children on these rafts. And the water rose into the earthen houses and softened the walls and burst them apart, and they melted down into the water and were as if they had never been. And then, as if water on earth drew water from heaven, it rained as though the earth were in drought. Day after day it rained. Wang Lung sat in his doorway and looked out over the waters that were yet far enough from his house that was built on a high, wide hill, but he saw the waters covering his land. And he watched lest it cover the new-made graves, but it did not, although the waves of the yellow clay-laden water lapped about the dead hungrily. There were no harvests of any kind that year, and everywhere people starved and were hungry and were angry at what had befallen them yet again. Some went south, and some, who were bold and angry and cared nothing for what they did, joined the robber bands that flourished everywhere in the countryside. These even tried to beleaguer the town, so that the townspeople locked the gates of the wall continually, except for one small gate called the Western Water Gate, and this was watched by soldiers and locked at night also. And besides those who robbed and those who went south to work and to beg, even as Wang Lung had once gone with his old father and his wife and children, there were others who were old and tired and timid, and who had no sons, like Ching. And these stayed and starved, and ate grass and what leaves they could find on high places, and many died upon the land and water. Then Wang Lung saw that a famine such as he had never seen was upon the land. For the water did not recede in time to plant the wheat for winter, and there would be no harvest then the next year. And he looked well to his own house and to the spending of money and food, and he quarreled heartily with Cuckoo, because for a long time she would still buy meat every day in the town. And he was glad at last, since there must be flood, that the water crept between his house and the town, so that she could no longer go to market when she would, for he would not allow the boats to be put forth except when he said. And Ching listened to him, and not to Cuckoo, for all her sharpness of tongue. Wang Lung allowed nothing to be bought and sold after the winter came, except what he said, and he husbanded carefully all that they had. Every day he gave out to his daughter-in-law what food was needed in the house for that day, and to Ching he gave out what the laborers should have, although it hurt him to feed idle men. And it hurt him so greatly that at last, when winter cold came and the water froze over, he bade the men begone to the south to beg and to labor until the spring came, when they might return to him. Only to Lotus he gave secretly sugar and oil, because she was not accustomed to hardship. Even on the new year they did not eat but a fish they caught themselves in the lake, and a pig they killed from the farm. Now Wang Lung was not so poor as he wished to seem, for he had good silver hidden away in the walls where his son slept with his wife, although his son and daughter-in-law did not know it. And he had good silver and even some gold hidden in a jar at the bottom of the lake, under his nearest field. And he had some hidden among the roots of the bamboos. And he had grains from the year before which he had not sold at market, and there was no danger of starvation in his house. But all around him there were people starving, and he remembered the cries of the starving at the gate of the great house once when he passed, and he knew that there were many who hated him well, because he still had that which he could eat and feed to his children. And so he kept his gates barred, and he let none in whom he did not know, but still he knew very well that even this could not have saved him in these times of robbers and lawlessness if it had not been for his uncle. Well did Wang Lung know that if it had not been for his uncle's power, he would have been robbed and sacked for his food and for his money and for the women in his house. So he was courteous to his uncle and to his uncle's son and to his uncle's wife, and the three were like guests in his house, and they drank tea before others and dipped first with their chopsticks into the bowls at mealtime. Now these three saw well enough that Wang Lung was afraid of them, and they grew haughty
and demanded this and that, and complained of what they ate and drank, and especially did the woman complain, for she missed the delicacies she had eaten in the inner courts, and she complained to her husband, and the three of them complained to Wang Lung. Now Wang Lung saw that although his uncle himself grew old and lazy and careless, and would not have troubled to complain if he had been let alone, yet the young man, his son, and his wife goaded him. And one day, when Wang Lung stood at the gate, he heard these two urging the old man, "Well, and he has money and food, and let us demand silver of him." And the woman said, "We will never have such a hold as this again, for well he knows that if you were not his uncle and the brother of his father, he would be robbed and sacked, and his house left empty and a ruin, since you stand next to the head of the Redbeards." Wang Lung, standing there secretly and hearing this, grew so angry that his skin was like to burst on him. But he was silent with great effort, and he tried to plan what he could do with these three. But he could think of nothing to do. When, therefore, his uncle came to him next day, saying, "Well, and my good nephew, give me a handful of silver to buy me a pipe and a bit of smoke, and my woman is ragged and needs a new coat," he could say nothing. But he handed the old man the 5 pieces of silver from his girdle, although he gnashed his teeth secretly. And it seemed to him that never in the old days, when silver was rare with him, had it gone from him so unwillingly. Then before 2 days were past, his uncle was at him again and again for silver, and Wang Lung shouted at last, "Well, and shall we all starve soon?" And his uncle laughed and said carelessly, "You are under a good heaven. There are men less rich than you who hang from the burnt rafters of their houses." When Wang Lung heard this, cold sweat broke out on him, and he gave the silver without a word. And so, although they went without meat in the house, these three must eat meat. And although Wang Lung himself scarcely tasted tobacco, his uncle puffed unceasingly at his pipe. Now, Wang Lung's eldest son had been engrossed in his marriage, and he scarcely saw what happened, except that he guarded his wife jealously from the gaze of his cousin, so that now these two were no longer friends but enemies. Wang Lung's son scarcely let his wife stir from their room, except in the evenings when the other man was gone with his father, and during the day he made her stay shut in the room. But when he saw these three doing as they would with his father, he grew angry, for he was of a quick temper, and he said, "Well, and if you care more for these three tigers than you do for your son and his wife, the mother of your grandsons, it is a strange thing, and we had better set up our house elsewhere." Wang Lung told him plainly then what he had told no one. "I hate these three, worse than my life, and if I could think of a way, I would do it. But your uncle is lord of a horde of wild robbers, and if I feed him and coddle him, we are safe, and no one can show anger toward them." Now when the eldest son heard this, he stared until his eyes hung out of his head. But when he had thought of it for a while, he was more angry than ever, and he said, "How is this for a way? Let us push them all into the water one night. Jing can push the woman, for she is fat and soft and helpless, and I will push the young one, my cousin, whom I hate enough, for he is always peeping at my wife, and you can push the man." But Wang Lung could not kill. Although he would rather have killed his uncle than his ox, he could not kill even when he hated. And he said, "No. And even if I could do this thing, to push my father's brother into the water, I would not, for if the other robbers heard of it, what should we do? And if he lives, we are safe. And if he is gone, we are become as other people, who have a little, and so are in danger in such times as these." Then the two of them fell silent, each thinking heavily what to do. And the young man saw that his father was right, and death was too easy for the trouble, and that there must be another way. And Wang Lung spoke aloud at last, musing, "If there were a way that we could keep them here, but make them harmless and undesiring, what a thing it would be! But there is no such magic as this." Then the young man smote his two hands together and cried out, "Well, and you have told me what to do. Let us buy them opium to enjoy, and more opium, and let them have their will of it as rich people do.
I will seem to be friends with my cousin again, and I will entice him away to the tea-house in the town where one can smoke, and we can buy it for my uncle and his wife."
But Wang Long, since he had not thought of the thing first himself, was doubtful. "It will cost a great deal," he said slowly, "for opium is as dear as jade."
"Well, and it is dearer than jade to have them at us like this," the young man argued, "and to endure besides their haughtiness, and the young man peeping at my wife?"
But Wang Lung would not at once consent, for it was not so easy a thing to do, and it would cost a good bag of silver to do it. It is doubtful whether the thing would ever have been done, and they would have gone as they were until the waters chose to recede, had not a thing happened. This thing was that the son of Wang Lung's uncle cast his eyes upon the second daughter of Wang Lung, who was his cousin, and by blood the same as his sister. Now, the second daughter of Wang Lung was an exceedingly pretty girl, and she looked like the second son, who was a merchant, but with her smallness and lightness, and she had not his yellow skin. Her skin was fair and pale as almond flowers, and she had a little low nose and thin red lips, and her feet were small. Her cousin laid hold of her one night when she passed alone through the court from the kitchen. He laid hold of her roughly, and he pressed his hand into her bosom, and she screamed out, and Wang Lung ran out and beat the man about the head. But he was like a dog with a piece of stolen meat that he would not drop, so that Wang Lung had to tear his daughter away. Then the man laughed thickly, and he said, "It is only play, and is she not my sister? Can a man do any evil with his sister?" But his eyes glittered with lust as he spoke. And Wang Lung muttered and pulled the girl away and sent her into her own room. And Wang Lung told his son that night what had come about, and the young man was grave, and he said, "We must send the maid into the town to the home of her betrothed. Even if the merchant Yu says it is a year too evil for wedding, we must send her, lest we cannot keep her virgin with this hot tiger in the house." So Wang Lung did. He went the next day into the town and to the house of the merchant, and he said, "My daughter is 13 years old and no longer a child, and she is fit for marriage." But Yu was hesitant, and he said, "I have not enough profit this year to begin a family in my house." Now Wang Lung was ashamed to say, "There is the son of my uncle in the house, and he is a tiger." So he said only, "I would not have the care of this maid upon me, because her mother is dead, and she is pretty, and is of an age to conceive. And my house is large and full of this and that, and I cannot watch her every hour. Since she is to be your family, let her virginity be guarded here, and let her be wed soon or late as you like." Then the merchant, being a lenient and kindly man, replied, "Well, and if this is how it is, let the maid come, and I will speak to my son's mother, and she can come and be safe here in the courts with her mother-in-law, and after the next harvest or so she can be wed." Thus the matter was settled, and Wang Lung was well content, and he went away. But on his way back to the gate in the wall where Ching held a boat waiting for him, Wang Lung passed a shop where tobacco and opium are sold, and he went in to buy himself a little shredded tobacco to put in his water pipe in the evenings, and as the clerk had it on the scales, he said, half unwillingly, to the man, "And how much is your opium, if you have it?" And the clerk said, "It is not lawful in these days to sell it over the counter, and we do not sell it so. But if you wish to buy it and have the silver, it is weighed out in the room behind this, an ounce for a silver piece." Then Wang Lung would not think further what he did, but he said quickly, "I will take 6 ounces of it." 28. Then after the second daughter was sent away and Wang Lung was free of his anxiety about her, he said to his uncle one day, "Since you are my father's brother, here is a little better tobacco for you." And he opened the jar of opium, and the stuff was sticky and sweet-smelling. And Wang Lung's uncle took it and smelled of it, and he laughed and was pleased, and he said, "Well now, I have smoked it a little, but not often before this, for it is too dear. But I like it well enough." And Wang Lung answered him, pretending to be careless, It is only a little I bought once for my father when he grew old and could not sleep at night, and I found it today unused, and I thought, there is my father's brother, and why should he not have it before me, who am younger and do not need it yet? Take it, then, and smoke it when you wish or when you have a little pain. Then Wang Lung's uncle took it greedily, for it was sweet to smell and a thing that only rich men used, and he took it and bought a pipe, and he smoked the opium, lying all day upon his bed to do it. Then Wang Lung saw to it that there were pipes bought and left here and there, and he pretended to smoke himself, but he only took a pipe to his room and left it there cold. And his two sons in the house and Lotus he would not allow to touch the opium, saying as his excuse that it was too dear, but he urged it upon his uncle and upon his uncle's wife and son. And the courts were filled with the sweetish smell of the smoke, and the silver for this Wang Lung did not begrudge, because it bought him peace. Now as the winter wore away and the waters began to recede so that Wang Lung could walk abroad over his land, it happened one day that his eldest son followed him and said to him proudly, "Well, and there will soon be another mouth in the house, and it will be the mouth of your grandson." Then Wang Lung, when he heard this, turned himself about, and he laughed, and he rubbed his hands together, and said, "Here is a good day indeed." And he laughed again, and went to find Ching, and tell him to go to the town to buy fish and good food. And he sent it in to his son's wife, and said, "Eat, make strong the body of my grandson." Then all during the spring, Wang Lung had the knowledge of this birth to come for his comfort. And when he was busy about other things, he thought of it. And when he was troubled, he thought of it. And it was a comfort to him. And as the spring grew into summer, the people who had gone away from the floods came back again, one by one and group by group, spent and weary with the winter and glad to be back. Although where their houses had been, there was nothing now but the yellow mud of the water-soaked land. But out of this mud, houses could be fashioned again, and mats bought to roof them, and many came to Wang Lung to borrow money, and he loaned it, at high interest, seeing how greatly it was in demand, and the security, he always said, must be land. And with the money they borrowed, they planted seed upon the earth that was fat with the richness of the dried water. And when they needed oxen and seed and ploughs, and when they could borrow no more money, some sold land and part of their fields, that they might plant what was left. And of these Wang Lung bought land and much land, and he bought it cheaply, since money men must have. But there were some who would not sell their land, and when they had nothing wherewith to buy seed and plough and oxen, they sold their daughters. And there were those who came to Wang Lung to sell, because it was known he was rich and powerful, and a man of good heart. And he, thinking constantly of the child to come, and of others to come from his sons when they were all wed, bought 5 slaves, 2 about 12 years of age, with big feet and strong bodies, and 2 younger to wait upon them all and fetch and carry, and 1 to wait on the person of Lotus, for Cuckoo grew old, and since the second girl was gone there had been none other to work in the house. And the 5 he bought in 1 day, for he was a man rich enough to do quickly what he decided upon. Then one day, many days later, a man came bearing a small, delicate maid of 7 years or so, wanting to sell her. And Wang Lung said he would not have her at first, for she was so small and weak. But Lotus saw her and fancied her, and she said pettishly, "Now this one I will have, because she is so pretty, and the other one is coarse and smells like goat's meat, and I do not like her." And Wang Lung looked at the child and saw her pretty frightened eyes and her piteous thinness, and he said, partly to humor Lotus and partly that he might see the child fed and fattened, "Well, and let it be so, if you wish it." So he bought the child for 20 pieces of silver, and she lived in the inner courts and slept on the foot of the bed where Lotus slept. Now it seemed to Wang Lung that he could have peace in his house. When the waters receded and summer came and the land was to be planted to good seed, he walked hither and thither and looked at every piece, and he discussed with Ching the quality of each piece of soil and what change there should be of crops for the fertility of the land. And whenever he went, he took with him his youngest son, who was to be on the land after him, that the lad might learn. And Wang Lung never looked to see how the lad listened and whether he listened or not, for the lad walked with his head downcast, and he had a sullen look on his face, and no one knew what he thought. But Wang Lung did not see what the lad did, only that he walked there in silence behind his father. And when everything was planned, Wang Lung went back to his house well content, and he said to his own heart, "I am no longer young, and it is not necessary for me to work any more with my hands, since I have men on my land and my sons and peace in my house." Yet when he went into his house, there was no peace. Although he had given his son a wife, and although he had bought slaves enough to serve them all, and although his uncle and his uncle's wife were given enough opium for their pleasure all day, still there was no peace. And again it was because of his uncle's son and his own eldest son. It seemed as though Wang Lung's eldest son could never give over his hatred of his cousin or his deep suspicion of his cousin's evil. He had seen well enough with his own eyes in his youth that the man, his cousin, was full of all sorts of evil. And things had come to pass where Wang Lung's son would not even leave the house to go to the tea shop unless the cousin went also. And he watched the cousin, and left only when he left. And he suspected the man of evil with the slaves, and even of evil in the inner court with Lotus, although this was idle, for Lotus grew fatter and older every day, and had long since given over caring for anything except her foods and her wines, and would not have troubled to look at the man had he come near. And she was even glad when Wang Lung came to her less and less with his age. Now, when Wang Lung entered with his youngest son from the fields, his eldest son drew his father aside, and he said, "I will not endure that fellow, my cousin, in the house any more, with his peepings and his lounging about with his robes unbuttoned and his eyes on the slaves." He did not dare to say further what he thought, and even he dares to peep into the inner courts at your own woman, because he remembered with a sickness in his vitals that he himself had once hung about this woman of his father's. And now, seeing her fat and older as she was, he could not dream that he had ever done this thing, and he was bitterly ashamed of it, and would not for anything have recalled it to his father's memory. So he was silent of that, and mentioned only the slaves. Wang Lung had come in robustly from the fields and in high humor, because the water was off the land and the air dry and warm, and because he was pleased with his youngest son that he had gone with him. And he answered, angry at this fresh trouble in his house, "Well, and you are a foolish child to be forever thinking of this. You have grown fond and too fond of your wife, and it is not seemly. For a man ought not to care for his wife that his parents gave him above all else in the world. It is not meet for a man to love his wife with a foolish and overweening love, as though she were a harlot." Then the young man was stung with this rebuke of his father against him. For more than anything, he feared any who accused him of behavior that was not correct, as though he were common and ignorant. And he answered quickly, "It is not for my wife. It is because it is unseemly in my father's house." But Wang Lung did not hear him. He was musing in anger. And he said again, "And am I never to be done with all this trouble in my house between male and female? Here I am, passing into my age, and my blood cools, and I am freed at last from lusts, and I would have a little peace. And must I endure the lusts and jealousies of my sons?" And then after a little silence he shouted again, "Well, and what would you have me do?" Now the young man had waited patiently enough for his father's anger to pass, for he had something to say. And this Wang Lung saw clearly when he shouted, "What would you have me do?" The young man then answered steadily, "I wish we could leave this house, and that we could go into the town and live. It is not meet that we go on living in the country like hinds. And we could go, and we could leave my uncle and his wife and my cousin here, and we could live safely in the town, behind the gates." Wang Lung laughed bitterly and shortly when his son said this, for he threw the desire of the young man aside for something worthless and not to be considered. "This is my house," he said stoutly, seating himself at the table and drawing his pipe toward him from where it stood, "and you may live in it or not. My house and my land it is. And if it were not for the land, we should all starve as the others did, and you could not walk about in your dainty robes, idle as a scholar. It is a good land that has made you something better than a farmer's lad."
And Wang Lung rose and tramped about loudly in the middle room, and he behaved roughly, and he spat upon the floor and acted as a farmer may, because although one side of his heart triumphed in his son's fineness, the other side was robust and scornful of him. And this, although he knew he was secretly proud of his son, and proud because none who looked at this son could dream that he was but one generation removed from the land itself. But the eldest son was not ready to give over. He followed his father, saying, "Well, and there is the old great house of the Huangs. The front part of it is filled with this and that of common people. But the inner courts are locked and silent, and we could rent them and live there peacefully, and you and my youngest brother could come to and fro from the land, and I would not be angered by this dog, my cousin." And then he persuaded his father, and he allowed the tears to come into his eyes, and he forced them upon his cheeks and did not wipe them away, and he said again, "Well, and I try to be a good son, and I do not gamble and smoke opium, and I am content with the woman you have given me, and I ask a little of you, and it is all." Now, whether the tears would have alone moved Wang Lung, he did not know. But he was moved by the words of his son when he said, "The great house of the Huangs." Never had Wang Lung forgotten that once he had gone crawling into that great house, and stood ashamed in the presence of those who lived there, so that he was frightened of even the gateman. And this had remained a memory of shame to him all his life, and he hated it. Through all his life he had the sense that he was held in the eyes of men a little lower than those who lived in the town. And when he stood before the old mistress of the great house, this sense became crisis. So when his son said, "We could live in the great house," the thought leaped into his mind as though he saw it actually before his eyes. "I could sit on that seat where that old one sat, and from whence she bade me stand like a serf, and now I could sit there, and so call another into my presence." And he mused, and he said to himself again, "This I could do if I wished." And he toyed with the thought, and he sat silent, and he did not answer his son. But he put tobacco in his pipe and lit it with a spill that stood ready, and he smoked, and he dreamed of what he could do if he wished. So, not because of his son, and not because of his uncle's son, he dreamed that he could live in the house of Huang, which was to him forever the great house. Therefore, although he was not willing at first to say that he would go or that he would change anything, yet thereafter he was more than ever displeased with the idleness of his uncle's son, and he watched the man sharply, and he saw that it was true he did cast eyes at the maids, and Wang Lung muttered and said, "Now I cannot live with this lustful dog in my house." And he looked at his uncle, and he saw that he grew thin as he smoked his opium, and his skin was yellow with opium, and he was bent and old, and he spat blood when he coughed. And he looked at his uncle's wife, and she was a cabbage of a woman, who took eagerly of her opium pipe and was satisfied with it and drowsy. And these were little trouble enough now, and the opium had done what Wang Lung wished it would do. But here was the uncle's son, this man still unwed, and a wild beast for his desires. And he would not yield to opium easily, as the two old ones had done, and take out his lusts in dreams. And Wang Lung would not willingly let him wed in the house because of the spawn he would breed, and one like him was enough. Neither would the man work, since there was no need and none to drive him to it, unless the hours he spent away at night could be called work. But even these grew less frequent, for as men returned to the land, order came back to the villages and to the town, and the robbers withdrew to the hills in the northwest, and the man would not go with them, preferring to live on Wang Lung's bounty. Thus he was a thorn in the household, and he hung about everywhere, talking and idling and yawning and half-dressed even at noon. One day, therefore, when Wang Lung went into the town to see his second son at the grain market, he asked him, "Well, my second son, what say you of the thing your elder brother desires, that we move into the town to the great house, if we can rent part of it?"
The second son was grown a young man by now, and he had grown smooth and neat and like the other clerks in the shop, although still small of stature and yellow-skinned and with crafty eyes. And he answered smoothly, "It is an excellent thing, and it will suit me well, for then I could wed and have my wife there also, and we would all be under one roof, as a great family is." Now Wang Lung had done nothing toward the wedding of this son, for he was a cool youth and cool-blooded, and there had never been any sign of lust in him, and Wang Lung had much else to trouble him. Now, however, he said in some shame, for he knew he had not done well by his second son, "Well, now, I have said to myself this long time that you should be wed, but what with this thing and that, I have not had time, and with this last famine and having to avoid all feasting. But now that men may eat again, the thing shall be done." And he cast about secretly in his mind where he should find a maid. The second son said then, "Well, and wed I will, then, for it is a good thing, and better than spending money on a jade when the need comes. And it is right for a man to have sons. But do not get me a wife from a house in town, such as my brother has, for she will talk forever of what was in her father's house, and make me spend money, and it will be an anger to me." Wang Lung heard this with astonishment, for he had not known that his daughter-in-law was thus, seeing only that she was a woman careful to be correct in her behavior, and fair enough in her looks. But it seemed to him wise talk, and he was rejoiced that his son was sharp and clever for the saving of money. This lad he had indeed scarcely known at all, for he grew up weak beside the vigor of the elder brother, and except for his piping tales he was not a child or a youth to whom one would pay great heed, so that when he went into the shop Wang Lung forgot him day after day, except to answer when anyone asked him how many children he had, "Well, and I have 3 sons." Now he looked at the youth, his second son, and he saw his smooth-cut hair, oiled and flat, and his clean gown of small-patterned gray silk. And he saw the youth's neat movements and steady secret eyes, and he said to himself in his surprise, "Well, and this also is my son." And aloud he said, "What sort of maid would you have, then?" Then the young man answered as smoothly and steadily as if he had the thing planned before, "I desire a maid from a village, of good landed family and without poor relatives, and one who will bring a good dowry with her, neither plain nor fair to look upon, and a good cook, so that even though there be servants in the kitchen, she may watch them. And she must be such a one that if she buys rice, it will be enough, and not a handful over. And if she buys cloth, the garment will be well cut, so that the scraps of cloth left over should lie in the palm of her hand. Such an one I want." Now Wang Lung was the more astonished when he heard this talk, for here was a young man whose life he had not seen, even though it was his own son. It was not such blood as this that ran in his own lusty body when he was young, nor in the body of his eldest son. Yet he admired the wisdom of the young man, and he said, laughing, "Well, and I shall seek such a maid, and Ching shall look for her among the villages." Still laughing, he went away, and he went down the street of the great house, and he hesitated between the stone lions. And then, since there was none to stop him, he went in, and the front courts were as he remembered them when he came in to seek the whore whom he feared for his son. The trees were hung with drying clothes, and women sat everywhere gossiping as they drove their long needles back and forth through shoe soles they made, and children rolled naked and dusty upon the tiles of the courts, and the place reeked with the smell of common people who swarm into the courts of the great when the great are gone. And he looked towards the door where the whore had lived, but the door stood ajar, and another lived there now, an old man, and for this Wang Lung was glad, and he went on. Now Wang Lung, in the old days, when the great family were there, would have felt himself one of these common people, and against the great, and half-hating, half-fearful of them. But now that he had land, and that he had silver and gold hidden safely away, he despised these people who swarmed everywhere. And he said to himself that they were filthy, and he picked his way among them with his nose up and breathing lightly because of the stink they made. And he despised them and was against them, as though he himself belonged to the great house. He went back through the courts, although it was for idle curiosity and not because he had decided anything, but still he went on, and at the back he found a gate locked into a court, and beside it an old woman drowsing. And he looked, and he saw that this was the pockmarked wife of the man who had been gateman. This astonished him, and he looked at her, whom he had remembered as buxom and middle-aged, now haggard and wrinkled and white-haired, and her teeth were yellow snags loose in her jaws. And looking at her thus, he saw in a full moment how many and how swift were the years that had passed, since he was a young man coming with his first-born son in his arms. And for the first time in his life, Wang Lung felt his age creeping upon him. Then he said somewhat sadly to the old woman, "Wake, and let me into the gate." And the old woman started up blinking and licking her dry lips, and she said, "I am not to open it except to such as may rent the whole inner courts." And Wang Lung said suddenly, "Well, and so I may, if the place please me." But he did not tell her who he was. Only he went in after her, and he remembered the way well, and he followed her. There the court stood in silence. There the little room where he had left his basket. Here the long verandas supported by the delicate red-varnished pillars. He followed her into the great hall itself, and his mind went back how quickly over the years past, when he had stood there waiting to wed a slave of the house. There before him was the great carven dais, where the old lady had sat, her fragile, tended body wrapped in silvery satin. And, moved by some strange impulse, he went forward and he sat down where she had sat, and he put his hand on the table, and from the eminence it gave him, he looked down on the bleary face of the old hag who blinked at him and waited in silence for what he would do. Then some satisfaction he had longed for all his days without knowing it swelled up in his heart, and he smote the table with his hand, and he said suddenly, "This house I will have." 29. In these days, when Wang Lung had decided a thing, he could not do it quickly enough. As he grew older, he grew impatient to have done with things, and to sit in the latter part of the day at peace and idle, and to watch the late sun, and to sleep a little after he had strolled about his land. So he told his elder son what he had decided, and he commanded the young man to arrange the matter. And he sent for his second son to come and help with the moving. And on a day when they were ready, they moved, first Lotus and Cuckoo and their slaves and goods, and then Wang Lung's eldest son and his wife with their servants and the slaves. But Wang Lung himself would not go at once, and he kept with him his youngest son. When the moment came for leaving the land whereon he was born, he could not do it easily, nor so quickly as he had thought. And he said to his sons when they urged him, "Well then, prepare a court for me to use alone, and on a day that I wish, I will come. And it will be a day before my grandson is born, and when I wish I can come back to my land." And when they urged him yet again, he said, "Well, and there is my poor fool, and whether to take her with me or not, I do not know. But take her I must, for there is no one who will see if she is fed or not, unless I do it." This Wang Lung said in some reproach to the wife of his eldest son, for she would not suffer the poor fool near her, but was finicking and squeamish. And she said, "Such an one should not be alive at all, and it is enough to mar the child in me to look at her." And Wang Lung's eldest son remembered the dislike of his wife, and so now he was silent and said no more. Then Wang Lung repented his reproach, and he said mildly, "I will come when the maid is found who is to wed the second son, for it is easier to stay here where Ching is until the matter is completed." The second son, therefore, gave over his urging. There was left in the house, then, none but the uncle and his wife and son, and Ching and the laboring men, besides Wang Lung and his youngest son and the fool. And the uncle and his wife and son moved into the inner courts where Lotus had been, and they took it for their own. But this did not grieve Wang Lung unduly, for he saw clearly there were not many days of life left for his uncle. And when the idle old man was dead, Wang Lung's duty to that generation was over. And if the younger man did not do as he was told, none would blame Wang Lung if he cast him out.
Then Ching moved into the outer rooms, and the laborers with him, and Wang Lung and his son and the fool lived in the middle rooms, and Wang Lung hired a stout woman to be servant to them. And Wang Lung slept and rested himself and took no heed of anything, for he was suddenly very weary, and the house was peaceful. There was none to trouble him, for his youngest son was a silent lad who kept out of his father's way, and Wang Lung scarcely knew what he was, so silent a lad was he. But at last Wang Lung stirred himself to bid Ching find a maid for his second son to wed. Now Ching grew old and withered and lean as a weed, but there was the strength of an old and faithful dog in him yet. Although Wang Lung would no longer let him lift a hoe in his hand or follow the oxen behind the plow, but still he was useful, for he watched the labor of others, and he stood by when the grain was weighed and measured. So when he heard what Wang Lung wished him to do, he washed himself and put on his good blue cotton coat, and he went hither and thither to this village and that, and he looked in many maidens, and at last he came back, and he said, "Now would I leave have to choose a wife for myself than for your son, but if it were I, and I young, there is a maid 3 villages away, a good buxom careful maid, with no fault except a ready laugh, and her father is willing and glad to be tied to your family by his daughter, and the dowry is good for these times, and he has land. But I said I could give no promise until you gave it." It seemed to Wang Lung, then, that this was good enough, and he was anxious to be done with it, and so he gave his promise. And when the papers were come, he set his mark to them, and he was relieved, and he said, "Now there is but one more son, and I am finished with all this wedding and marrying, and I am glad I am so near my peace." And when it was done and the wedding day set, he rested, and sat in the sun and slept, even as his father had done before him. Then it seemed to Wang Lung that as Ching grew feeble with age, and since he himself grew heavy and drowsy with his food and his age, and his third son was yet too young for responsibility, that it would be well to rent some of his farthest fields to others in the village. This Wang Lung did then. And many of the men in the villages nearby came to Wang Lung to rent his land and to become his tenants. And the rent was decided upon, half of the harvest to go to Wang Lung because he owned the land, and half to the one who hired it because of his labor. And there were other things which each must furnish besides. Wang Lung, certain stores of manure and bean cake, and of sesame refuse from his oil mill after the sesame was ground, and the tenant to reserve certain crops for the use of Wang Lung's house. And then, since there was not the need for his management that there had been, Wang Lung went sometimes into the town, and slept in the court which he caused to be prepared for him. But when day came he was back upon his land, walking through the gate in the wall about the town as soon as it was open after dawn came, and he smelled the fresh smell of the fields, and when he came to his own land, he rejoiced in it. Then, as if the gods were kind for once, and had prepared peace for his old age, his uncle's son, who grew restless in the house, now quiet and without women, save for the stout serving woman who was wife to one of the laborers, this uncle's son heard of a war to the north, and he said to Wang Lung, "It is said there is a war to the north of us, and I will go and join it for something to do and to see. This I will if you will give me silver to buy more clothes and my bedding, and a foreign fire stick to put over my shoulder." Then Wang Lung's heart leaped with pleasure, but he hid his pleasure artfully, and he demurred in pretense, and he said, "Now you are the only son of my uncle, and after you there are none to carry on his body, and if you go to war, what will happen?" But the young man answered, laughing, "Well, and I am no fool, and I will not stand anywhere that my life is in danger. If there is to be a battle, I will go away until it is over. I wish for a change and a little travel and to see foreign parts before I am too old to do it." So Wang Lung gave him the silver readily. And this time, again, the giving was not hard, so that he poured the money out into the man's hand, and he said to himself, "Well, and if he likes it, there is an end to this curse in my house, for there is always a war somewhere in the nation." And again he said to himself, "Well, and he may even be killed, if my good fortune holds, for sometimes in wars there are those who die.
He was in high good humor then, although he concealed it,
and he comforted his uncle's wife when she wept a little to hear of her son's going, and he gave her more opium and lit her pipe for her, and he said, "Doubtless he will rise to be a military official, and honor will come to us all through him." Then, at last, there was peace, for there were only the two old sleeping ones in the house in the country besides his own. And in the house in the town, the hour grew near for the birth of Wang Lung's grandson. Now Wang Lung, as this hour drew near, stayed more and more in the house in town, and he walked about the courts, and he could never have done with musing on what had happened, and he could never have his fill of wonder at this, that here, in these courts, where the great family of Huang had once lived, now he lived with his wife and his sons and their wives, and now a child was to be born of a third generation. And his heart swelled within him, so that nothing was too good for his money to buy, and he bought lengths of satin and of silk for them all, for it looked ill to see common cotton robes upon the carved chairs and about the carved tables of southern blackwood, and he bought lengths of good blue and black cotton for the slaves, so not one of them needed to wear a garment ragged. This he did, and he was pleased when the friends that his eldest son had found in the town came into the courts and proud that they should see all that was. And Wang Lung took it into his heart to eat dainty foods, and he himself, who once had been well satisfied with good wheaten bread wrapped about a stick of garlic, now that he slept late in the day and did not work with his own hands on the land, now he was not easily pleased with this dish and that. And he tasted winter bamboo and shrimp's roe, and southern fish, and shellfish from the northern seas, and pigeons' eggs, and all those things which rich men use to force their lagging appetites. And his sons ate, and Lotus also. And Cuckoo, seeing all that had come about, laughed and said, "Well, and it is like the old days when I was in these courts, only this body of mine is withered and dried now, and not fit even for an old lord." Saying this, she glanced slyly at Wang Lung and laughed again, and he pretended not to hear her lewdness, but he was pleased, nevertheless, that she had compared him to the old lord. So with this idle and luxurious living, and rising when they would and sleeping when they would, he waited for his grandson. Then, one morning, he heard the groans of a woman, and he went into the courts of his eldest son, and his son met him and said, "The hour is come, but Cuckoo says it will be long, for the woman is narrowly made, and it is a hard birth." So Wang Lung went back to his own court, and he sat down and listened to the cries. And for the first time in many years he was frightened, and felt the need of some spirit's aid. He rose and went to the incense shop, and he bought incense, and he went to the temple in the town where the Goddess of Mercy dwells in her gilded alcove. And he summoned an idling priest and gave him money and bade him thrust the incense before the goddess, saying, "It is ill for me, a man, to do it, but my first grandson is about to be born, and it is a heavy labor for the mother, who is a town woman and too narrowly made, and the mother of my son is dead, and there is no woman to thrust in the incense." Then, as he watched the priest thrust it in the ashes of the urn before the goddess, he thought with sudden horror, "And what if it be not a grandson, but a girl?" And he called out hastily, "Well, and if it is a grandson, I will pay for a new red robe for the goddess, but nothing will I do if it is a girl." He went out in agitation because he had not thought of this thing, that it might be not a grandson, but a girl. And he went and bought more incense, although the day was hot, and in the streets the dust was a span's depth. And he went out in spite of this to the small country temple, where the two sat who watched over fields and land. And he thrust the incense in and lit it, and he muttered to the pair, "Well now, and we have cared for you, my father and I and my son, and now here comes the fruit of my son's body. And if it is not a son, there is nothing more for the two of you." Then, having done all he could, he went back to the courts, very spent. And he sat down at his table, and he wished for a slave to bring him tea, and for another to bring him a towel dipped and wrung from steaming water to wipe his face. But though he clapped his hands, none came. No one heeded him.
and there was running to and fro, but he dared to stop no one to ask what sort of child had been born, or even if any had been born. He sat there, dusty and spent, and no one spoke to him. Then at last, when it seemed to him it must soon be night, so long he had waited, Lotus came in, waddling upon her small feet because of her great weight, and leaning upon Cuckoo, and she laughed, and said loudly, "Well, and there is a son in the house of your son, and both mother and son are alive. I have seen the child, and it is fair and sound." Then Wang Lung laughed also, and he rose, and he slapped his hands together, and laughed again. And he said, "Well, and I have been sitting here like a man with his own first son coming, and not knowing what to do of this and that, and afraid of everything." And then, when Lotus had gone on to her room and he sat again, he felt amusing, and he thought to himself, "Well, and I did not feel like this when that other one bore her first, my son." And he sat silent and musing, and he remembered within himself that day, and how she had gone alone into the small dark room, and how alone she had borne him sons, and again sons and daughters, and she bore them silently, and how she had come to the fields and worked beside him again. And here was this one, now the wife of his son, who cried like a child with her pains, and who had all the slaves running in the house, and her husband there by her door. And he remembered, as one remembers a dream long past, how Olan rested from her work a little while and fed the child richly, and the white, rich milk ran out of her breast and spilled upon the ground. And this seemed too long past ever to have been. Then his son came in smiling and important, and he said loudly, "The man-child is born, my father, and now we must find a woman to nurse him with her breasts, for I will not have my wife's beauty spoiled with the nursing, and her strength sapped with it. None of the women of position in the town do so." And Wang Lung said sadly, although why he was sad he did not know, "Well, and if it must be so, let it be so, if she cannot nurse her own child." When the child was a month old, Wang Lung's son, its father, gave the birth feast, and to it he invited guests from the town, and his wife's father and mother, and all the great of the town, and he had dyed scarlet many hundreds of hen's eggs, and these he gave to every guest, and to any who sent guests, and there was feasting and joy through the house, for the child was a goodly fat boy, and he had passed his 10th day and lived, and this was a fear gone, and they all rejoiced. And when the birth feast was over, Wang Lung's son came to his father, and he said, "Now that there are the three generations in this house, we should have the tablets of ancestors that great families have, and we should set the tablets up to be worshipped at the feast days, for we are an established family now." This pleased Wang Lung greatly, and so he ordered it, and so it was carried out. And there in the great hall the row of tablets was set up, his grandfather's name on one, and then his father's, and the spaces left empty for Wang Lung's name and his son's when they should die. And Wang Lung's son bought an incense urn and set it before the tablets. When this was finished, Wang Lung remembered the red robe he had promised the Goddess of Mercy, and so he went to the temple to give the money for it. And then on his way back, as if the gods cannot bear to give freely and not hide sting somewhere in the gift, one came running from the harvest fields to tell him that Ching lay dying suddenly, and had asked if Wang Lung would come to see him die. Wang Lung, hearing the panting runner, cried angrily, "Now I suppose that accursed pair in the temple are jealous because I gave a red robe to the town goddess, and I suppose they do not know they have no power over childbirth and only over land." And although his noon meal stood ready for him to eat, he would not take up his chopsticks, although Lotus called loudly to him to wait until after the evening sun came. He would not stay for her, and he went out. Then, when Lotus saw he did not heed her, she sent a slave after him with an umbrella of oiled paper. But so fast did Wang Lung run that the stout maid had difficulty in holding the umbrella over his head. Wang Lung went at once to the room where Ching had been laid, and he called out loudly to anyone, "Now how did all this come about?" The room was full of laborers crowding about, and they answered in confusion and haste, "He would work himself at the threshing. We told him not at his age. There was a laborer who is newly hired. He could not hold the flail rightly, and Ching would show him, "It is a labor too hard for an old man." Then Wang Lung called out in a terrible voice, "Bring me this laborer!" And they pushed the man in front before Wang Lung, and he stood there trembling and his bare knees knocking together, a great ruddy, coarse country lad with his teeth sticking out in a shelf over his lower lip, and round, dull eyes like an ox's eyes. But Wang Lung had no pity on him. He slapped the lad on both his cheeks, and he took the umbrella from the slave's hand, and he beat the lad about the head, and none dared stop him lest his anger go into his blood and at his age poison him. And the bumpkin stood it humbly, blubbering a little and sucking his teeth. Then Ching moaned from the bed where he lay, and Wang